Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, Spirited Conversations with Interesting People. I am your host, Christopher Hart. And I'm going to go ahead and combine these real quick. So today was, I don't think we have covered agave yet. I don't think we've covered mezcals, tequilas. I know we talked briefly with Frank Fernandez about El Tesoro, but I've been doing a little bit with Illegal in recent history. They're the only, they were supposed to be the only mezcal at the Whiskey Social this year, but apparently there was another one behind them that snuck their product in. So today was a discussion with Rachel, who has been with Illegal. Kind of a weird story. When I met the market manager for Illegal last year, it was the same day that she met him, and then she ended up working with him. So working for them. So Rachel's been in this industry a long time internally on the bar side, and now represents a mezcal that is doing pretty well here in Texas. And I'm all for barrel aged spirits. I'm all for anything that's distilled that still has flavor. So screw you, vodka. But yeah, so this week's episode, I sit down with Rachel Bowie, pronounced like Drambuie. I learned right before we started recording. We talk Mexican spirits and a little bit about cultural appropriation, which comes up briefly. I know for those of you who follow me on social media, you know that we briefly talked about the idea of having that discussion on the show. This was not officially that discussion, but it does come up briefly, and we both give our very shortened opinions on cultural appropriation and spirits. I know it sounds controversial. It's really not controversial. It's very, I think it was done very respectfully. So we'll see. If you get mad, I apologize now. No, I don't apologize. Screw you. This is my show. I better not ask you to rate and review now, because if you didn't like our conversation on cultural appropriation, I don't want you anywhere near our reviews. So, our merch, HBS merch, that's the bourbon group, whiskeymerch.com. That's our whiskey merchandise for the show. We moved it over from our regular website, My Whiskey Neat, a few months back. And this week's show is, as always, sponsored by Cholado Distill Artisan Spirits, leader in premium artisan products like Boonehaven, Deanston, Lecheg, Tobermory, Baines, Black Bottle, and Scottish Leader. You can pick up the entire line at your local liquor store, or if you are a retailer, reach out to your local United Wine and Spirits rep. And I'm going to go ahead and warn you now. We briefly talk about the episode I plan to do with Brad Williams, who's a comedian I'm a big fan of. But Brad, unfortunately, stood me up today. I'm super sad about it. So he couldn't make it. So when you hear us talking about Brad Williams being on next week's episode, just know that it doesn't happen. So other than that, I think that covers all of our bases. Yeah, sweet. Cheers. Thanks so much for coming on. Absolutely.
Thank you for inviting me. We just met,
No, we met at the Whiskey Social. I mean,
oh yeah, yeah. Right. But I guess
but that night's a blur. I don't remember anything.
Yeah, it was just so you were busy as hell. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're just running around, earpiece in.
Yeah. I've always felt like a douchebag. There's some things that that make sense logistically, like wearing a headset at those events, but you also look like a complete jerk, right? So, and I've had people, I'll be having conversations with people or vendors at the event, and then I'll have to literally cut them off in whatever sentence, mid-sentence, and go like this, because I can't hear anything. And someone's saying that, we're missing water at station two or whatever.
Yeah. That's why, that's why maybe I'm just mentally thinking we met at the industry night at Rosewater, because, that night, it was very much me just giving you thumbs up, being like, yeah, I'm good, and you running around and doing your thing, which, by the way, that was one of the – it was a very smooth running event. I really enjoyed being a part of that event. Thank you for inviting Illegal, because
– you guys are the only mezcal.
We were the only mezcal.
And there was no tequila this year. We had one tequila last year.
There was a tequila right behind me.
Tequila right behind you.
Yeah, they were – it was a really beautiful decanter. I can't remember – what it looked like, but
there might have been someone that had.
I should have taken a photo, I noticed either way, it was kind of cool us being on either side of each other, because I was able to turn around and I'm not gonna lie, at first I kind of I felt a little uncomfortable because there weren't a lot of people flocking to my table. A lot of people were, you know, hitting the bourbon tables, the rye tables, all the whiskey tables really hard. But I have to remember I am at a whiskey event. However, once you get that first, you know, whiskey drinker in there to try that añejo, they just round up all their friends. Or if you have a mezcal drinker in there who's invited by their bourbon
whiskey drinker, yeah,
that's really cool because then they're excited. They're like, oh, you know, I either love Illegal or I've never heard of it. Let me try it. So it was really great. It was a great experience. And if you know, you should look into inviting more agave distillates into your.
We have intentions. Yeah. In fact, after sitting down with Jared Hempstead at Balcones and drinking Chansa, which is one of the only sherry producers, and ignore any facts I'm saying as facts because I'm definitely, we had a few and I definitely misremember some things, but there's a great sherry that's made here in Texas that is absolutely delicious, tastes like pecans. And I was like, you know what? We need fortified wines at the event. And so I would love to bring in and work with, we work with Victory already, right? So, and they've got a great old school, like late 1800s, early 1900s fortified wine list that they, you know, bring in some like really crazy. And that's the whole goal of the event is to, yes, it's whiskey focused. There's a lot of events that'll have other spirits, but only because they need filler. Like they can't get enough whiskey brands to go to the event. We specifically, for the first couple of years, we're only allowing one of each alternate spirit because I did want to branch out. We've got a couple of wines that come. I want two things. Some brands or some suppliers have multiple spirits in their portfolio. Mm-hmm. So they want to feature as much, you know, get as much as they can on the event, not just their whiskeys. And two, I personally enjoy going to these things with my wife as a guest. And if my wife isn't, and she is a whiskey drinker, but if she isn't a whiskey drinker and she's definitely a wine drinker, then she can have a wine and I can have my whiskey and everyone's happy and we're together, right?
I think the slow growth though is good because you don't have a bunch of brands jumping in at the beginning. Then the next year it's a completely different, you know, mm-hmm. feel and look than it was the year before. I think that's a good direction you're going because some of these cocktail events, especially these large tasting events, consumer focused events, they all just get very, and even the trade events, the trade focused events, because, I mean, I'm still bartending part time. I'm a part time ambassador for Houston, put in full time work because I love the brand, but, I still get behind the stick and I still attend those trade events. And sometimes it's just like, I'll see the same exact presentation, the same exact, you know.
Oh, they for sure become a bit, as a brand ambassador, I'm sure it becomes a bit a blur of monotony a little bit where it's the same, right?
Yeah.
There is a standard format for some of these things, but there are some brand ambassadors who really try to, they seem to always have a motivation to do something new, to bring this or to bring that or to do, like William Grant, they brought a bicycle powered blender to make pina coladas at the event. So you literally got on a little stable bike and it powered a blender so that they could make margaritas or whatever they were making.
And they had I feel like they have like a suitcase that does gin and tonics or something.
And they've got that 18-wheeler truck with the giant shaker.
Yeah. And they have so much presentation. A lot of those bigger portfolios, though, like Campari, we're so deviating away from Illegal. But here's the thing: is like we can jump into Illegal, what it stands for, because you know you do have Willie G that like they always go all out. You know their Hendrix presentations or Monkey Shoulder presentations are always so much fun. Same with like you know Campari, they always have something really cool going on, something really interesting. They connect with their trade. Like Illegal, we are really known for our charitable giving and our flash tattoo events, our music series, our gallery series. Illegal does a lot, and we have this identity.
Couple of memorable shirts as well.
Yeah, we have some shirts. We have the three bunnies, and then we have our Donald shirts. Somebody can go, you guys can go research those on your own. We aren't just a mezcal brand. We are also, like I said, a charitable company, and our brand was started by basically a guy who, John Rex, John Rexer, dealing antiques, and then just decides he wants to travel. So starts going down through Mexico. I think he stopped in Oaxaca for a little bit, definitely drank plenty of mezcal and fell in love with it. Ended up going into Guatemala, running out of money there and opening a bar, the bar Cafe Noce, which is where Illegal kind of started. And the connection with Illegal is in Oaxaca, it's in Guatemala, it's New York, now it's in Texas. So it's all over. And we do all kinds of different things. So when the cool thing that I really like about – I just started with the company in October.
I was about to say, yeah. I think we actually met Eric
the same exact day,
right? Yeah. At TPSA.
TPSA. That was in August.
Yeah, that was in August. And I don't even remember who it was, but they texted me and said there was some reason they were connecting me with Eric. And they were like – I think it was to get a wristband to get in, because at the time I work with the industry, but I'm not that event is, for those who don't know, TPSA, Texas Package Store Association, does a big similar style event to the Whiskey Social, except it's what it really is. And I'm not throwing shade, I'm not trying to be ugly, but it's the big selling items you see in a liquor store, right? So there's Jägermeister there, there's Jello shots there. Like everyone
I think it's so much fun, honestly.
I had fun. Don't get me wrong. I mean, my wife had a little too much fun.
I mean, it's over at 5 PM, or like 5 or 6. So sure. Everyone's like,
and then you're in a hotel. So if you wanted to, you could just stay there. Like you don't have to go anywhere. But I met Eric there because he got me a wristband to get in. And at the end of the event, we're standing there talking and, you know, swaying a little bit, and heard the whole story behind Illegal. And I've known about your brand for a while. I've had a few of your spirits before I met him, but he's a bit of a character.
Yeah.
And apparently we both met him the same day. And then you went to go work for the company.
Yeah. So I went over to the table, and my personal history with Illegal is I was attracted to the marketing, and just a little shout out to our marketing manager, Kaylin Rexer, who basically created Illegal's identity. So I really loved the image. I loved the simple black. I loved the bunnies. I loved what it stood for. I loved the tattoos. I loved like the music. I loved the art. I loved everything about the brand, even though I wasn't really a mezcal drinker.
Sure.
I wasn't even a whiskey drinker until 2015. So, Illegal is really the brand that brought me into the category. And then I attended, I want to say, like 2 or 3 pop-ups that were the tattoo events.
Explain what that is, by the way.
Okay, so we have these 3 flash tattoos, and anyone who's watching the videos, there's 3 bunnies. We have our bottle, and then we have the curse of Illegal. And what we do is we partner with a local tattoo artist. We do a 3-4 hour setup, and we bang out as many flash tattoos as possible. We ask the artist to also come up with like an agave, and then possibly work with the bar that we're hosting it at, and maybe doing the bar's logo.
Sure.
We just did one for Cottonmouth's 1 year anniversary, where the 2 owners of Cottonmouth got the Cottonmouth logo. But then, you know, some other people got the Illegal bottle and the Illegal bunnies. And on the trade side, I'm not really sure as much on the consumer side, but a few other brands have done this similar thing. So I'm not really sure who started it, but it's something that a few brands are doing.
Sure. I know of there's a bar in Pasadena that would do it. And if you got the bar's logo tattooed on you, your first drink for life is on the bar. So every time you come back, you show them your tattoo. And I've seen a bar do it. I've never seen a brand do it.
Yeah, there's actually a bar in Austin that they did during a recent cocktail conference. If you got a tattoo, you got basically a free beer every day for the rest of your life if you got their logo tattooed.
Sure.
So, but I had attended. I will take on any free tattoos anybody offers me. I'll just take it. So
I like the pizza one.
Yeah, one was not free. That one's done from a friend of mine,
but
good friend.
You know what it reminds me of? I was a huge Ninja Turtle fan as a kid.
Yeah, well.
And that's that same. Yeah, I didn't know
and
that.
And I have Raphael on my arm. Yeah. So
it's a very much cowabunga, Michelangelo type.
I was like, I want it to be like dripping. I want it to look, my only regret is making it a stuffed crust.
Yeah, I was just wondering. It looks like it's a stuffed crust.
I'm not even really into stuffed crust, but whatever.
No one's into stuffed crust. What is it, 1995? no one eats stuffed crust pizza.
It was like all the rage. Everybody wanted that stuffed crust back then. So I met them at during Tales of the Cocktail in New Orleans.
Haven't even started drinking yet.
I know.
Speaking of which, let's start with something and then tell the Tales of the Cocktail story.
So one important thing about our producers is we source from three different producers. We sell a lot of mezcal, so this prevents strain on any like one area, any one palenque. Sure. So I'm going to actually give you two tastes of two different Hovens. I will butcher. I've only been with the company since October, and I will butcher the names. So I'm just going to say Los Javis is going to be the first bottle that we're drinking out of, and Mal de Amor is going to be the second bottle.
Okay. And what does Hoven mean for those?
Hoven is going to be young. Some people still say Blanco because they're thinking about the tequila category.
Sure.
But
and we were talking about that off mezcal. Camera is before we started recording. We're in such a great time for spirits because we're bucking stereotypes, right? So when you think of Mexican spirits, for years you thought of Patron or Jose Cuervo. That was like the general consumer's knowledge, general consumer, not the industry consumer or industry knowledge. And now, you know, from Sotols to Mezcals to, you know, the entire category, and you see a lot of whiskey drinkers branching out into other spirits, right? Even unaged spirits. Sorry. Smells fantastic.
It's beautiful. And I think that, so that first one is the Los Javis bottle, and that's been open for a little bit, so it's been resting. The new bottle that I just picked up today is from Mal de Amor. An important thing about mezcal is it's an artisanal spirit, very much so. Some producers are still produce it in an ancestral way, which includes wooden mallets, crushing the agave.
Ancestral or ancestral?
Ancestral.
I was like, I didn't know ancestral was a word.
Ancestral. It's
ancestral, right? It can't be incestral.
Was I saying ancestral?
I thought I heard you say ancestral, and I was like,
my
that's
goodness. This what was does that my mean? Biggest fear coming on here. You're accusing me. No, I'm just kidding. So some producers still produce in the style of wooden mallets and clay pots. A lot of artisanal mezcals that you'll have out in the market are going to be produced the ancestral way.
You got it. You said it. Ancestral.
Artisanal.
Oh, artisanal.
Sorry. Okay. I knew I was going to mess this up.
Listen, this is why this show is fun for me.
Yeah. So the artisanal.
Sure.
Right? Yes. I'm so sorry. Okay. Artisanal spirits are going to be the in-between industrial and ancestral.
Sure.
Ancestral is going to – ancestral mezcals are produced in clay pots.
Right. The old school way.
Very old school. Very, very traditionally, as you would say. A lot of the in-between mezcals and mezcals you'd find on the market are probably going to be the artisanal. Tejona milled. Usually roasted in the piñas or roasted in the ground, open air fermentation, that type of thing. And then you'll have your industrial. I can't name a specific brand that is industrial. But those are,
We don't mudslinging on this podcast.
those piñas are being cooked in autoclaves.
Sure.
Or they're being cooked in ovens the way like tequila piñas are cooked, with steam perhaps instead of with wood. Mezcal is,
it's very earthy, very traditional.
It's very earthy. It starts all the mezcal, the piñas. We use 100% espadine, which is an extremely abundant type of agave in Mexico. Tequila is made with 100% blue agave. That's kind of the difference. Tequila is going to be a mezcal, but not all mezcals are tequila.
Sure.
So think of the word mezcal like you would say.
All tequilas are mezcal, but not all mezcals are tequila.
Yeah. Mezcal is going to be like the word wine or barbecue or whiskey. Yeah, exactly. Whiskey. Yeah. Whiskey, bourbon would be your tequila. Bourbon would be like scotch or rye. There, it has to be 100%. If you say 100% tequila, it's 100% blue agave. There are mixtos out there. I believe Cuervo Gold is a mixto, meaning it's some sugarcane distillate and agave distillate, which is okay because that's how the America was introduced to tequila, was through Jose Cuervo. So thank you so much for doing that.
There's been, and the same thing with rums. There's been a deep history and what most, and I'm not not slinging mud, but the iconic brands from the 90s and 2000s are, I'm trying so hard not to be ugly. There's just what our perception of what rum was up until recently, or what tequila was up until the last decade, the average consumer is evolved quite a bit.
Yeah. You guys, so in your last, the last podcast that I had listened to, which I think I paid most attention to because I'm friends with Chris Morris, or I've known
him. I apologize.
Yeah. I've known him for a few years now. So, you guys kept saying like educated drinkers and things like that. I grew up in a side of the industry where nobody was educated. We were slinging, Goldschlager. I drink Budweiser every single day until 2015. Sure. So
even now I have an affinity, something nostalgic for me about Budweiser Red Label.
I take a Bud Heavy when I'm at the rodeo, for sure.
The and if anyone in the industry sees the uneducated consumer, I think the most it would be the bar side, right? You guys see the most.
I work at the football stadium where the Texans play. So I get to see not a lot of like uneducated, because you'd be surprised at how many people are disappointed that I cannot make them an old fashioned or a Manhattan or, you know, a pina colada, like the simple things that you want to make for people. But it's like, I'm sorry, I'm making highballs today. Simple calls, one and ones. But that's still the majority of the industry. That is.
I would agree.
That's a lot of the general public, you know. I've done tastings in liquor stores down in Clear Lake. I've done tasting in liquor stores up in Spring. And I worked for a gin company before I got the job with Illegal. And with both gin and mezcal, a lot of people, they don't even want to stop. But I would have bourbon right next to me, completely unknown bourbon, and people are just stopping and they're tasting it. So I'm like, the people are evolving. They're, you know, previously, I feel like maybe in a liquor store, people may not have stopped and just, you know, tasted that bourbon, tasted every whiskey that's available. They would have probably passed it up and said, no, I'm coming in for my Smirnoff or my Bacardi, which there's nothing wrong with that. I sling cases of those during football games.
I was talking to, a head distiller of a certain brand. And he was saying he was at one of these trade shows trying to sample out some product about 5 years ago. And he's got a whiskey. And this woman walks up and says, I drink Bacardi White Label. How is this different than what you make? And he stumbled.
You're saying this is a whiskey?
Yeah. So she asks, how is Bacardi White Label rum different than your whiskey? And it caught him off guard because, it's hard to believe that.
And that's my job as a bartender.
Would make that conflation they're two completely different spirits. And it's been an astronomical growth in education over the past 5 years, at least in Texas, but you're still going to see a ton of uneducated.
But that's a good thing for the category, a category like mezcal, a category like Sotol. We saw the way tequila was in the 90s, and it started to come up. People are paying hundreds, if not thousands of dollars for some of these bottles out there now. And and I'm not saying the same thing will happen with mezcal. Maybe it will. Maybe, a really, really old Del Maguey bottle from 1996 or something will be worth thousands of dollars. Or
the tequila secondary market is a thing, and there's a lot of really great old juice that was made and that still is made, but it just went unnoticed. It's kind of like the age of Stutzel Weller, right? The age of Stutzel Weller is some of the best bourbon that was ever made ever. And during the time, not enough people were drinking it that it went out of business, right? So
yeah. So during Tales of the Cocktail, just this last year, I've only gone twice. And this is the only year that I've had anything crazy happen with me. And I think it just leads into the craziness of Illegal. I ended up going to their flash tattoo event and receiving the bottle that's on my arm from the.
I didn't actually see it.
It's just an Illegal bottle.
Sure.
It's done by a bee yesterday. But yeah, it's an Illegal bottle, and I got that during a flash tattoo pop up during Tales of the Cocktail. I ended up seeing those Illegal guys that evening, I want to say.
So you weren't.
I was not working for the brand.
Right. I just got the tattoo.
I found out that they were having a pop up and I was there. Like anything sure. else is going on at Tales did not matter when I found out that Illegal was doing a pop up. That's how weirdly dedicated I was to the brand before I started working for them. Yeah. I just like had a passion. I really loved them. And I think that that's true for a lot of people that work, especially most of the brand ambassadors. I'm meeting everyone at the end of July. But everyone that I've gotten to meet so far, they're just very passionate about their connection with Illegal and where it started. And that night I met Carlos and Steve, and they're just like, they were very welcoming. They were like, come around with us the entire time.
Sure.
They were very friendly. We talked about Sotol. We talked about Mezcal. We ended up going to a pool party that evening where there were no bathing suits.
Oh.
So yeah, so that was a little interesting. It was very fun, but you know, Tales at 4 a.m. in New Orleans.
I am a drinker. I'm a lover of life and a good time, but 4 a.m.
It's hard. It's rough, man. That's why I don't close real bars anymore. That's why I do the event life that I do, because we get out at midnight.
Yeah. Oh, our event, I was at home watching Netflix at 11:30.
And some bartenders get home at 5:30 a.m. after closing their bar.
I love Pasha Morchetti's late night text when you know he's been working the bar and he'll come home and just complain about something on Facebook. And it's usually endlessly hilarious or a video or of a dog.
He's such a dad.
I'm a huge Pasha fan.
I am too.
He's very well loved, very well respected.
And he takes care of his employees there. And I love that bar. I love his kids. I love Pasha. Good guy. But yeah, whenever I was in New Orleans, I met those two dudes, hung out with them the entire time, went home with a tattoo the next day. A month later, I'm at TPSA and I find out that there is a little Illegal table. And I run over to it. This tall, lanky, blue-eyed widow, you know, he's just like gringo, whatever. He's standing there with his hat on and his like weird accent and like, hey girl, you want some mezcal? And I was like, yeah, of course. I love Illegal. And I'm just like gushing over the brand. And he's so excited for me. You know, he's like,
you talked to him about your tattoos?
I showed him all my tattoos and he's like, can I take pictures of these? He sent photos to, I guess, the crew. And then he was like, come back and, you know, grab one of my bottles, whatever. And I regret, I ended up giving that bottle away. And
he sent me home with the Reposado the same day.
It was a Hoven, but it was lot 30 or something like that. And we're in the 100s now. So it would have been a nice bottle to hold on to, I think. But he handed me a bottle that day and we exchanged numbers. We said we would, you know, grab a few drinks that night, but we just both ended up crashing and not really connecting. I am a member of the Dallas USBG. They're pretty active up there, and I've done a lot of like work with them in the past.
Ooh.
They were very supportive during Hurricane Harvey.
Ooh.
Okay, and the USBG is a national organization.
I know, I'm just kidding.
And we love Dallas, and I've heard you talk about Dallas. Okay, but Dallas is all right. Okay,
you saw the Four Roses episode.
Yeah, they do some cool stuff up there. Okay,
they do. I'm a huge fan of them. Dallas is fine. I think it's funny to make fun of the rivalry between any city, right?
You know,
anytime a comedian shits all over let me write that down. A city, it's always like, I just love it. It's something about it tickles me. It's kind of like a fart, right? Everyone laughs at a fart.
The hilarious thing is Houstonians just feed into this rivalry that doesn't exist for Dallas.
Sure, I don't know about that, but
once I go up there, they just laugh us off. If anything, they love us and they're very supportive of their little Bayou brother, I think.
I don't know about that.
We can talk about that for days. But I went up to Dallas because Eric Fry, the state manager, the guy we met at TPSA, who gave me that bottle, Illegal was hosting the USBG meeting for that month. And I went up and it was a packed house. It was one of the most attended USBG meetings, I want to say, that I've seen in either Houston or Dallas. And it was fun. It was a good time. Eric is a trip. That day I found out some really weird things about him, some really interesting things about him. He can go on, and he likes to talk about music and stories and Guatemala and Tennessee and mezcal. And
I think he wore a hat the day I met him. One of those indoor hat guys.
Yeah, he's definitely one of those guys. Like
Morgan Weber. You know Morgan?
So Gil, do I know more? Is he the...
Morgan Weber, 8 Row Flint, Agricole Hospital.
Yeah, we briefly talked about that.
I think so. Yeah.
Is he in a hat guy as well?
Indoor hat guy. Yeah. Vintage hat. Like the hat, any hat he has is from decades ago that he somehow collected and tracked down. And
yeah. Gilbert Marquez, our global ambassador, makes hats. He like does all this crazy amazing things to them, puts feathers in them, puts some heat to it and distresses it and stuff. So I think Eric's gotten a few of his hats from there. I know there's a hat maker in Dallas that they've like gone to a couple of times. So yeah, they're definitely hat people.
I never understood why you would wear a hat when you've got a beautiful head of hair. Like, meaning that if I wore a hat, it would be to cover up thinning, right?
Yeah.
And there's some guys that, you know, like the Morgans of the world that have like great wavy hair, and you cover it with a hat, it makes me want to stab them in the neck, especially indoors, right? I'm totally venting about my own insecurities, but so I've been a fan of you guys since I met him at TPSA. I thought he sent us home with a reposado, and you guys actually are one of the few that actually barrel age.
Is that
controversial?
I want to say people say it's controversial. There's two words that I don't like to talk about very much. The word purist and the word traditional, because I feel like those are really weird words for people like us, especially, I want to say white people and American people specifically, to be talking about a spirit that we've only just gotten familiar with. Maybe the Ron Coopers, maybe the John Rexers can speak on it.
Sure.
Because they have been so entwined into that culture. But you know, Eric Hernandez, and I will actually show you NOM001X. So this is the first licensed palenque for mezcal in Mexico. And he ages the mezcal. So to me, you know, that guy's a legend in the mezcal industry as far as I know. Just like you, don't take anything I say for fact. This is just like my opinion from what I've seen, what I've experienced in the last, you know, year, knowing Illegal, but then since October working for Illegal. I don't think it's controversial. You know, there are a few other brands that are doing it. There's a couple of mezcal reposados out there, and White Dog was White Dog before it was whiskey.
Sure. I've talked about that too. I don't understand. I know people who won't. They're bourbon drinkers who won't drink White Dog. Mm-hmm. And there's some really tasty White Dog out there. But unfortunately, they'll drink mezcal, unaged, right? Mm-hmm. They'll drink other white spirits, but won't drink white whiskey because they think it tastes bad.
Mezcal drinkers out there, bartenders who have gone down to Oaxaca a couple of times, bartenders who are lucky enough to have 50 labels behind them on their back bar. A lot of those bartenders might say, no, I don't want to have an aged mezcal behind my bar, but I don't see any reason.
Isn't tequila an aged mezcal?
Technically, yeah. And at one point, tequila, the piñas for tequila, the Blue Weber were roasted in the ground. There was an issue with deforestation in Mexico. So they had to switch to ovens. So tequila's changed over the last 100 years. I don't see why we should be preventing or trying to gatekeep, you know, the change of añejo if that's what they want to do. Mezcaleros obviously in Mexico are doing it, or Illegal wouldn't have the juice in the bottle.
Sure.
And you know, earlier I was saying we're not just a mezcal brand. We are a charitable company. We're all these different things. So the product isn't just the joven that's in there, the repo, the añejo that's in there.
It's bigger than that.
Yeah, it's our relationship with the mezcaleros. It's the brick company that they use our wastewater from to create bricks to help, you know, local villages, you know, do repairs and things. It is the certified wood farmers that we work with to make sure that we're not contributing to deforestation. It's the fact that we use 100% espadine. So we've thought a lot about what we put into the bottle. Not we. Actually, John Rexer thought a lot about what he was putting into the bottle for many, many years. In 2004, when he opened up Cafe Noce, he started bringing mezcal down and just like glass bottles that he was bringing down on his hip from Oaxaca down to Guatemala. There's all this lore about him, you know, dressing up as like a priest one time so he can get like a pallet over. And, you know, there's so many exciting stories with Illegal, but he was drinking mezcal and serving it in his bar for many years before Illegal was even a thought. The name comes from an article kind of that was written by a woman named Rachel, by the way.
Yeah, worst.
Yeah. They're pretty awesome, man, if I'd say so myself. So I do my research. Her name was Rachel. She's a wonderful woman who talked about the illegal mezcal that they were serving in the back of Cafe Noce. And
I like Monica better, by the way. Yeah, Rachel's are the Come Dallas on. Of the
Rachel's are the Dallas.
Rachel's are the Dallas of the Friends. Yeah.
Totally made me lose track.
As soon as I thought of a Friends reference, like I had to, I could not say it.
So he's bringing his mezcal down and serving it in the back of Cafe Noce, and Cafe Noce is this wonderful bar that kind of attracts. Expats, musicians, artists, backpackers, bunch of gringos mostly, I want to say. But it's a fun place, a really fun spot. It's really, really fun spot. And they were serving the mezcal at the back. Most of the time you could just get beer in the front.
Is it still around?
It's still around.
Is it still his?
Still open. It's still his.
Yeah.
The funny thing is I was like, when am I going to go to Oaxaca and see production? Because I can learn as much as I can on paper and what people tell me. I really like to see things. And they're like, oh, you might go to Guatemala before you go to Oaxaca, because that's how important Cafe Noce is to our roots. That is literally where Illegal started. People started coming in asking for that mezcal. And he said, well, you know, let's make a brand. The cool thing is, the stories of each producer is different. One of the producers that we get the majority of our product from, the Mal de Amor guys, they were actually living in the States illegally for a while, and then it wasn't working for them here. This was in around, I want to say 07, 08, when we were all struggling here. They're barbacks and, you know, busboys in LA, and they see that people are kind of drinking on mezcal because, of course, everyone's cooler in LA than the rest of us. So they always get things way ahead of us. And those guys went back to Mexico and continued the tradition that their father and their grandfather and their, you know, grandfather before him were doing. So they're fourth generation mezcaleros. And these guys are, you know, they employ, I think, 60 people from their local village. So they've been able to give back to their community and build a life for their family and build something better than they could have even imagined here in America. So maybe like the reverse American dream. And I think it's great that, you know, John kind of fell into Cafe Noce. He ran out of money when he got to Guatemala. And the reason he made relationships with these guys in Oaxaca was because he traveled through there, spent a little time hanging out, drinking mezcal. That built a relationship. And if you look at the timeline, it's really beautiful because it all leads up to me working for the company, you know, me meeting
Eric
at TPSA and, you know, the things that we can do with the mezcal, the way we give back. Right now we have a Love Your Neighbor, Love Your Planet campaign, where we are giving money to a few charitable organizations that are very important to us. Previously, we've given to an organization called Niños de Guatemala, and it's a charity that helps run two schools in Antigua. And those types of things are important to us. There's a lot of money in booze. We pay our mezcaleros in dollars. We think it's just we are a company. Can I say the S word?
Yeah, sure.
So we're a company that gives a shit, I like to say. We like to think about our fellow man. We care about our mezcaleros. We care about our relationships. We care about the relationships at the bars.
So it brings up something that I've been wanting to cover. There was a recent article that was published about cultural appropriation with spirits.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not the episode I'm going to have that conversation, but I am wanting.
No.
I think
I'll touch on my opinion of it. of cultural appropriation of spirits and maybe holidays is something, and just kind of cultural appropriation in general.
You're going to give your opinion?
Just my opinion, a little bit of an
opinion.
Sure,
just your opinion?
A little bit. I'm a very opinionated person, but I think that if the people in the place of origin are okay making it, and then we can work with them in a sustainable way that doesn't impact their lives or their environments negatively, I don't see why it's an issue for maybe the category to grow, for people who aren't Mexicans to open bars that have like a Mexican focus. I don't think that those things are wrong necessarily. I don't think Cinco de Mayo is necessarily a wrong thing. I spent 3 years working in a Mexican restaurant waitressing.
Sure.
It's where I met my daughter's dad. So like Cinco de Mayo was a money day for us. So we float, like I've always been very connected with the Mexican culture.
Sure.
And I think as long as we are respectful of the Mexican culture, well, any culture, if we're talking rum, you know, maybe we're talking about Puerto Rico or Venezuela, but I just think we have to be mindful. And also as myself, this is the reason why I was like, let's not have this conversation.
Sure.
Also not think that just because we've been educated a little bit, we're not the authority on it.
Oh,
that
sure.
We're able to learn and take some in. So Misty that works with Del Maguey, I actually sat down with her in January and I said, look, I've only been working for this company for 3 months and I want to know how I can represent the category of mezcal, agaves, you know, Mexico, and the in a way that doesn't, you know, that doesn't, that's not wrong.
Sure.
And she gave me some pointers. And I think one of the biggest things is just like taking a step back, knowing that you don't know everything, knowing that, you know, it's a very sensitive topic and we're kind of encroaching on somebody else's culture. So if we can do it with permission and we can do it with grace, I think that, I don't think that it's a terrible thing.
So I'm in agreement with you. I think there's a spectrum of reasonability, and I think as far as the society goes, we're so quick to be on one end of the extreme that when we lose all nuance, if something's happening and you're so quick to say, I'm anti this because this and that, sometimes you're so quick to not consider those who are doing it in a sustainable way, paying a good wage, and are respectful of that culture and that culture's identity of spirit, right? So if traditionally it was, you're not bastardizing a product, so to speak.
I don't believe so. Not so with that's the aging.
Goal.
Yeah.
Well, no. I'm definitely not. I definitely don't think that that's, I wasn't okay. referring to that. I just mean that I am going to plan on having this conversation and I want to get two people in on both ends of the spectrum to have the conversation respectfully and to have the discussion over the appropriation of cultures with spirits. I don't think anything is inherently bad, meaning if you wanted to open a bar in Mexico, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. If you wanted to – listen, the only reason why America is called the melting pot is because we are so quick to – not everyone, obviously, but every culture's here. You know, there's no official language. We've got something like 150 different languages spoken here in the U.S. I don't think anything's inherently bad.
Yeah.
But there are some cases which are,
for
don't
sure.
do this, don't
yeah.
do that. But yes, I do want to have that conversation. And
you should. And I think it's important, especially, you know, I have a bottle of Klondike here on the table. That's the Sotol. I was lucky enough to go to Mexico with them in 2015 before they were even a brand. Jorge Raptis. I'm not even going to say their names. Never mind.
Sure.
So I went with a group. There was about five of us that went to Chihuahua, and we got to go to, I think, like eight different Sotol distilleries. And it was amazing to see all the different, like really different ways that they
produce
Sotol, because I had gone to plenty of bourbon distilleries. I've done the bourbon trail. I've gone to plenty of bourbon and whiskey distilleries. I've gone to some local distilleries. So I've seen the production method, the way we do it here in the States. I've never seen piñas ground with like the engine of a truck. That was really exciting and amazing. I never seen someone put snake venom in a spirit. And that was something that I got to experience. I know it's
interesting.
It's crazy, but it's interesting. Sure. Those guys are
That's how Fireball is made, by the way.
with snake venom? Interesting. The more you know. So with the Sotol, I fell in love with the category because I felt like I was experiencing something nobody else was experiencing.
Sure. That's how I felt when I first tried it.
Yeah. So Steve Sharma with El Big Bad, he actually went on the trip with me. That was the very first time we ever met. And we bonded over mezcal and Sotol. Clayton Check, he owns a bar in tequila called La Cata. He was there with us as well. And, you know, I can't express to you how the bonding experience over a few bottles of an agave distillate. Sotol isn't an agave distillate, but we did have plenty of mezcal on the table and we were drinking the Sotol that was being made locally. We just filled up a bunch of Coca-Cola bottles. And I've been in love with that spirit ever since 2015. Now there is Sotol being made that is produced in Texas.
Yeah.
And that there is lots of
controversy.
Yeah. And there's a lot of opinions by people about that Sotol. I don't know anything on that specifically because I'm not sure if there is a denomination of origin in Chihuahua. I know that technically, Texas is still in some parts of the Chihuahua Desert. Like they're all, you know, it was all Mexico at one point. Yeah.
The terroir is the same.
Yeah. It's the same. And yes, it is the same plant. And I can't speak on that specific topic, but you're right. There is controversy out there with like spirits and
Appropriation.
Appropriation of the spirits.
I'm eager to see how it goes.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to try to get a multicultural panel, a different ends of the spectrum with feelings on both sides. And I'm interested to have the discussion because I think I've said this before. I said this recently. We try to avoid all politics in the HBS, in the Houston Bourbon Society. But recently we allowed a certain topic to come up about African-American drinkers mm-hmm. and the recognition from the industry now to actually start paying attention more to it. And we had a very, for the most part, very civil discussion.
And African-American bar owners and bartenders, they're all very important.
So we had a very brief conversation on it. And my feelings are very summed up simply as this, that when we as a society are faced with a decision to think of something one way or the other, or to make a decision one way or the other, it should be a decision whose principal focus is bringing us together, not pushing us further apart.
Yeah.
And if something comes up and the even in the zeitgeist, if the decision is you can't do this, but we can do that, that to me is ultimately divisive. It ultimately separates us. It ultimately pushes us further away from each other. And there are some gender double standards, racial double standards. And in my opinion, I think it only serves to pull us further apart instead of bring us together. So I think over time, I think that conversation went very well and we'll save that for another day. In the meantime, I'll definitely, I haven't had the Reposado since I tried it. But I would like to try a couple more things before we wrap up.
This is from lot 68. And let me see what the...
That's the Reposado? And is that, in terms of age, is that different for mezcals? Meaning
mezcals and tequilas, yes. They will be different. Tequilas, I believe, and do not... This is not to the book. Tequilas, I believe, can be aged up to...
24 months?
I thought it was...
I could be wrong. I'm always wrong.
Maybe it is 24 months, but it's definitely way higher than a Reposado with mezcal. Our Reposado is 3 to 6 months. It really depends on, I'm sure, which palenque, what time of year they end up barreling it, because over the summer, you know, the summer months are probably going to have a faster aging effect on the mezcal than the winter months would. So it's 3 to 6 months, and the Añejo is 13 months, and So our Reposado, the way we produce is we produce our Hoven and we barrel it at proof into new American oak. They're not used bourbon barrels. That is
– Are they charred?
They are charred. They're toasted and charred the same way. I think it's a level 3 char, the same way that a bourbon barrel would be. And then the first round is – going to be reposado for the 3 to 6 months in a brand new barrel. Those barrels are dried out, and then we put fresh oven in there. Use that twice for añejo. And that's honestly, I think it's beautiful because you can get 3 different bottles of añejo, just as we have here, that have
all look completely different.
Yeah, they just have like different hues. Some one's more golden, one's more yellow, this one's more straw. And I think that's really great, especially since they can come from different producers, different times of year. And I think that's really – it's fun. If you're a whiskey drinker who likes those small batches, so you like a little – some differences from batch to batch, and you have your little collections, this is – the añejo especially is one that you can collect, and you can get a bunch of different notes from the different bottles and different expressions. The reposado is – so much fun to go into a liquor store and just check and see what the bottle looks like, because those can get really dark sometimes. And sometimes they're really light. We have a pretty light one today, but sometimes they can get really dark. And I'll just like snatch up that bottle because I'm interested. I want to know what it tastes like. And I think that's a big thing about a lot of mezcals. Unless you're getting a single village with one producer, with one family. And even then you might get some nuances, changes from bottle to bottle, depending on how long it's rested in that bottle, what time of year they harvested the agave, what time of year they fermented and distilled. But yeah, that's going to be true across the category, is being able to get changes from bottle to bottle. And the fact that we have 3 different producers, if you look at the back of the bottle, that's where you'll be able to find the producer information.
Sure.
And you can find that information. Tequila is the same way. You can find the NOM number on the back of the tequila bottles, and also which palenque that they source from. We were talking about a little controversy and separation, and I about the mezcal industry and the category. It's very welcoming. It's so welcoming, because a lot of these brands were started by these labels are started by families, and they're run by families, and they've been run by families for hundreds of years. And a lot of the gringos that came back and started, you know, partnered and brought into the States, those guys went and are basically family now to these producers. So there's a lot of conversations that should be had, but it's such a welcoming category. And there's bars like, you know, we mentioned 8 Row Flint earlier. We were talking about Bad News Bar.
Rosewater.
Rosewater. There are bars with incredible mezcal collections. And some of those bars have, you know, pretty good Sotol collections as well, not just Klondike, but a couple of other brands. And Illegal, you know, I'm making some headway here. Just got started in October. So, you know, I'm trying to bring Illegal to the people and, you know, be a part of the community the best we can. We're going to bring some music series this year. We're going to do some charity pop-ups.
Sure.
We're going to do a lot of stuff. But for what I would love to do is I would love to do more like kind of like Houston Bourbon Social.
The Houston Whiskey Social?
Houston Whiskey Social. Yeah, because my favorite part of this job, I have two favorite parts. I love being a bartender, so I love to feed people alcohol and tell them about what they're tasting. And then for
them – what a way to word that.
Sorry.
feed people alcohol.
and then they get curious about it, and they ask you questions, and they want to know how you know all of this. And, you know, it's really exciting, because then every once in a while you get somebody who's been down to Oaxaca a few times, so that's exciting. So I really love those consumer-facing tasting events. I love them so much. I love to sit and talk about mezcal, because not really a lot of people, they may have heard of it, but they kind of steer away from the category. So hopefully me being on today will help connect some of your listeners to the category, because even if you don't go out and drink Illegal tonight, you know, hopefully if you see that green bottle, you know, Vita on the back bar, because that's what a lot of bars will probably have, that you'll give it a shot, because it's a great distillate, and it's got a story, and it's got a great history, and it's so close to us. We're in Texas right now. Yeah. You and I.
I'm very happy with it.
Yeah. So what'd you think about that repo?
Yeah, I like it a lot. It's got there's this, I hate to say this because I know it's going to come off as ignorance, but there's a sugar watery taste I get from Illegal that kind of reminds me, there's a sweetness to it. Like mm-hmm. not an overtly sweet aggressiveness, but more like an underlying a soft sweetness is probably the best way to put that. So let's talk about Sotol.
Let's talk a little bit about Sotol. Yeah.
So you brought a bottle.
Yeah. I wanted you to try.
I've only had two different kinds and neither was this.
Neither was the brand Clondé?
Correct.
Awesome.
So there's Desierto, yes. El Desierto, and there's another one. And
maybe Hacienda is in that one.
That's it. Yep. Yeah. I'll say this respectfully because it is meant with love, but it tastes like dirt.
It is so vegetal.
I wouldn't say vegetal. Vegetal, I think of Isla. I think of whiskey.
Sorry. Yes.
It's very dusty, dirty water.
I'm so used to the dustiness and dirtiness these days that to me, I'm like, oh, I just get like those green veggies in it. You know, I get that like earthy, like
earth. You know what it is? It's petrichor in a bottle. Do you know what petrichor is?
No.
Petrichor is the way pavement smells when it's been raining. So after a rain, the way the street smells, it's got kind of a humidity, dusty, kind of an earthy note, but with concrete in the mix. So wet stone is what it tastes like to me.
Wet stone right here. As soon as you said that, I guess I can just do the same.
Use this one.
That one.
There you go.
Okay. So we said tequila is mezcal. Not all mezcal is tequila.
Sure.
Sotol is not an agave.
Sure.
It is, I believe
it's related. It's
distantly related.
Sure.
I think it's from the asparagus family. And then the agave is from the lily family. But then they all tie up to something.
In the same way that roaches and lobsters are all distantly related.
Humans and birds, you know.
Yeah.
So, like I was saying, whenever I went to Mexico in 2015, I got a last minute invite. My friend.
That smells like wet pavement.
Stone. Yeah. I got invited to do like a bartender pop up.
Sure.
In Chihuahua.
Cork, so I don't.
And. Luckily, I was able to tour around the Hacienda Sotol distillery. I believe they were formerly a brandy distillery because they have big, giant brandy barrels. And it's a really, really huge facility. But I feel like they were kind of they were the first mainstream Sotol, perhaps, to start getting into bars. They had a few. They had their Rustico. They had their I think they came out with a couple of cream flavors. But Clondé was trying to go a different direction than to just work with one producer. The two of the guys that invited me down on that trip started this brand, and Jorge and Ricardo. And they work with individual producers, and they do extremely small batches. It's extremely allocated. It's hard to get a hold of. And that doesn't necessarily make it good to all people.
Sure.
But
it's definitely a few trigger words. Like, it sounds great to hear. I mean, just looking in the breakdown, right? So grinding, it was well, let's start from the top. It gives it the village, the plant varietal, how it was cooked in the oven, underground conical, and grinding with an axe, like just the complete nerd breakdown of every possible aspect of this is they're all great things to read. Like, people want more information, not less.
Yeah. And that allows the consumer to tie it back to the exact producer. There's a thumbprint for the Sotolero on there.
Oh, that is far more flavorful than the other two I had.
There are a few colors, so you'll see different labels out there. I think there's a blue, a purple, a pink.
It's perfumey,
and then
too.
I got the green. Depending on where it comes from, you might have more oils in it. It might be a little drier.
This is really dry, very floral, really sticks with you. The finish is – yeah, that is far more
I feel like I've had the green before, though.
No, that's probably the most intense Sotol I've ever tasted. And it's only 49%. But it is very fragrant. kind of takes my breath away a little bit. Like it's the mouthfeel is incredible. It's extremely robust.
And I think, oh my gosh. And this is what excites me about Mexican, 83, I think is what I got for that one.
And where'd you get this at?
Specs.
So I can go today.
You can go get it right now. They had one bottle left.
Which Specs?
Smith Street.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know what I'm picking up on the way home.
So where Sotol is now is perhaps where mezcal was 30 years ago in like the 1960s, 1970s, where you're still getting guys using like heavy wooden mallets and you had the Tohono mill. But a lot of it was more of the ancestral style, you know, a lot more by hand. And tequila is where mezcal might be in 15 years. And then Sotol might be a lot more industrialized in 10 years. And so Sotol might be in the position that mezcal is in a few years. So I see Mexican distillates progressing in a positive way.
Sure.
This goes back to us not being as, you know, I guess prejudiced against spirits, other distillates.
That's the other thing. Going back to cultural appropriation, my mouth is numb. Is the nothing, in my experience, nothing has been more unifying than booze.
Mm, yes.
And especially now we're in such an era of acceptance and appreciation of all types of processes, right? You know, rum is exploding right now. This is fantastic. I'm not even kidding. I'm going to Smith Street today. I'm going to buy the last bottle. I'm going to bring it home. My wife is going to post about it. Like nothing is more unifying as a culture than booze. Man.
Yeah. I mean, in the...
it's telling you, it's like I'm beklempt. Like,
I do have a little bit of that on my tongue. Meeting those guys at Tails and drinking with them, you know, at that pool party, meeting Eric at TPSA and him handing me that bottle.
Sure.
You know, my relationships during all the cocktail conferences, whenever I went to Mexico several years ago and drank in Chihuahua, like all these are moments literally over a glass. A lot of them are over glasses of an agave distillate or Mexican distillate, which I'm very lucky to be drinking because in my opinion, they're a superior
spirit. Then what?
Then.
Where's my bring whiskey and neat back up so I can point to the word whiskey? What then American spirits? Is that what you're about to say?
Should we edit this out?
Wow.
No, not like
hateful.
Okay, so
then whiskey.
One of the things that Eric Fry likes to say is superior sugars make superior spirits, and
he wears hats indoors, so you can't listen to anything he
said. Listen, an agave takes 7 years to mature at minimum. So, I mean, we've got a beast of a plant that we're distilling.
Sure.
So, I mean, it's you're drinking
that is incredible
over a decade's worth of work, basically.
Well, to put peated whiskey into a glass, it takes centuries, right? You've got to develop the peat over hundreds of years.
Okay,
so. All I'm saying
you're right.
I'm just kidding. I'm being sensitive. This is absolutely going to become one of my most favorite things to show people. I love showing people new spirits. And I've got a brother-in-law. So Eric gave me one of those Donald shirts and a bottle of Reposado. And my brother-in-law, he's white, but he's born and raised in Mexico. And I mean, the guy can speak fluent Spanish, right? And every once in a while, he comes back to Houston and we spent the evening on the back patio and it was one of those 4 a.m. nights that were pretty rough. And my wife, her sisters, we're all sitting there. We're drinking mezcal. I brought up the Sotol and we sat there and we just had the most incredible time together. And he had never had Sotol and it's a Mexican spirit, right?
Yeah.
So it was one of those things that it's my favorite thing. Try people on mezcal, try people on tequila, try people on whiskeys, just put it in front of them, right? And that's the birth of the whiskey social is to put stuff in front of people. We've got to go. I just realized where we are in time.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming. I thoroughly enjoyed this. There's a few more of those bottles I'd like to taste, but we've got to go.
Yeah.
But,
I highly encourage you to talk to more agave people and some Sotol people in the future.
I want to get Frank Fernandez in here to talk about El Tesoro. So I'm a huge
Jorge Raptis. He works with Diageo. I think he's the agave person.
I don't know him.
And then maybe I'll link you up with Ricardo and you can talk about some Clande.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate it. And cheers.
Cheers.